Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rockland, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to the Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rockland, and I'm here to help you make peace with food. That means no more counting calories or carbs, no more thinking about food all the time. It really is possible to lose weight and gain health, all without ever going on another diet. If you'd like to join me today and let me know what's on your mind in regards to these topics, I would love to hear from you. Please call me at 818-602-4929. That's 818-602-4929. Now, if you listened to last week's show, you got a chance to meet a few of our regular callers, Larry from Burbank, Nick, and also Giovanni. And they were talking about what it's like to be a guy dealing with food, weight, and body image issues of one kind or another. And one listener told me afterwards, she said that she was struck by how similar or actually equivalent the issues are for the guys and for women. So when Giovanni talked about being teased for being chubby as a kid, she said it could have been anyone talking about the shame of being body shamed. It wasn't gender specific, and she's exactly right. Food, weight, body image issues are a human problem, not one specific to girls or women. And I also want to thank the guys again for coming into the studio and for being so open and so candid about their experiences. Larry from Burbank, Nick and Giovanni, you are amazing. And the other regular caller, Brian from Chicago, you're in Chicago, we're in LA. I'm sorry you couldn't join us, but you're amazing too. Okay, so here's a question from a listener named Dawn, who says, every time I get the courage to ask for what I want, I feel selfish and guilty, even if nobody else makes me feel that way. I always end up going home and stuffing my face, which makes me feel even guiltier. What can I do to stop feeling this way? So that's a great question, Dawn. And by the way, that's Dawn as in dishwashing soap, D-A-W-N, not mafia. Not mafia, Dawn, since we're talking about guys. Okay, that was random. Okay, so what she's asking is essentially about how to feel comfortable with self-care. And a lot of people feel selfish when they consider what they want, especially when their wishes conflict with the wishes or needs of others. So here's an example. Recently, someone I know went on a cruise to Mexico with a group of girlfriends. And she proudly reported that none of her friends had found out about her lifelong dread of water and ocean liners. She said she was petrified the whole time, but nobody ever knew it. She said all she could think about was the Poseidon adventure, but nobody had a clue that she was actually terrified. By the way, if you never saw the Poseidon Adventure, it's about a cruise ship that gets capsized by a tidal wave, and there are several survivors who have to try to make it to the top of the ship, which is upside down, as it is filling with water. So scary. So scary to think about while you're on a cruise, right? So I asked her, like, why didn't you tell your friends you're afraid of water? She said, that would have been selfish. They were so excited about all of us taking a cruise together. I didn't want to spoil it for them. Now, the definition of selfish is having no consideration for other people and being solely concerned with your own interests or with what brings you pleasure or benefits you. In contrast, the definition of selfless is to be more concerned with the needs and wishes of others than with your own. It's the opposite of selfish. So this woman on the cruise thought she was being selfish. She was actually being selfless. And it's a problem when those are the only two options, because neither of those are good options. if you're not completely selfless, if you have some basic concern about your own well-being, you might feel selfish, as she did. But the good news is there's actually a middle ground, self-care. That means balancing your needs with those of others. So everyone who has flown a commercial airliner knows that flight attendants tell passengers, parents, if you're traveling with your children and the oxygen masks drop, place a mask over yourself first before attending to your kids. That's because if you give your oxygen away, you're of no use to others and you're likely to suffocate. Not good. So this can be understood as a metaphor about self-care. If you do not take care of yourself, guess what? You're going to be of no use to anyone, and you're going to suffocate. You're going to suffer. Or to put it another way, I think this is a biblical saying. I'm not completely sure, but an empty vessel cannot serve. So what to do differently? If you say yes to cake, yes to pizza, yes to chocolate, yes to all those things that you think you shouldn't be eating, maybe you need to start saying no, not to people. Not, wait, reverse that. Not to food, but to people. So in certain situations, saying no to others is like saying yes to yourself. And when you do that, you're far less likely to stuff your feelings literally and figuratively. So another example, when my husband and I were first dating, we went to the movies a lot. And this one time really sticks in my mind. I actually don't remember what we saw that night, but I vividly recall this couple who were in front of us at the ticket line. This was so far, this was like, what, 16 years ago, 17 years ago? People still stood in line in tickets and didn't get their tickets online. These people were in front of us, and at first I couldn't tell if they were like on their first date or if they were together or married, or like I couldn't tell what their relationship was. And the guy said, "So, you know, what do you want to see?" And she's like, "Oh, it doesn't matter." And so he indicated like this horror movie that had just come out. And he's like, "Well, what about that one?" And she had this look on her face. You know that look. The one that says, "Oh, I so do not want to see that movie. No, no, not that one. No." But what she said was, "Oh, great, whatever. I'm just happy to be with you away from the kids." Okay, so I figured out it was probably not a first date. So the guy said, "Well, it could be kind of violent. I know you don't like blood." He's trying to be considerate. He's checking it out with her. But she does not respond to his outreach like, "You're right, maybe not that one." She says, "Oh, I'm totally fine with it. Whatever you want is good with me." It seemed obvious to me that this woman would probably choose sitting in a dentist chair and getting a root canal without anesthesia to watching that particular movie. But she agreed to see it. Why couldn't she say no? I mean, he gave her an out. He knew she didn't like gory, bloody movies, violence. Why didn't she say, "Yeah, no blood. Thanks very much. Let's find a comedy or something we both like"? And it's not just women who have a hard time saying no or setting limits. One of my guy friends can't say no to anything his boss asks. You know, the boss will be like, "Oh, can you work late? Can you meet a deadline by working over the weekend?" My friend's like, "Yeah, sure, no problem. Reschedule your vacation? Sure, why not? No worries. Hawaii's not going anywhere." So here are some possible and common reasons for why it might be difficult for you to say no to other people. One is feeling guilty, as if somehow it's wrong to choose yourself, like we were talking about earlier. Feeling greedy, as if it's greedy to want what you want if someone else wants something different. So somehow they're not the greedy ones if they get what they want, right? It's sort of a one-directional greed. Not wanting to come off as difficult, as if saying no makes you difficult and cranky and too much trouble. Not wanting to upset anyone, as if you're responsible for the feelings of others. Afraid to hurt someone's feelings, as if what the other person wants, what the other person thinks, what the other person feels is more important than what you want, think or feel. And that's related to a fear of rejection, as if people won't like you, they won't want to be your friend if you disappoint them somehow. Also, fear of retaliation. For example, my friend thought if he said no to working over the weekend, he wouldn't get promoted. So how does this relate to binging or overeating? Well, if you're giving up what you want to make other people happy, which is sometimes known as people-pleasing, then you're likely carrying around some resentment or anxiety. Instead of recognizing that you feel upset, you may use food for distraction, because while you're eating, you're not thinking about what's bothering or upsetting you. Food is comfort, food is distraction, food helps you numb out. You may even turn that resentment or anxiety that you feel towards others onto yourself. Instead of being upset that you didn't set limits or didn't speak up for what you really wanted or needed, you get upset because you ate too much, or you ate too much of the wrong thing, or because you weigh more than you think you should. You get anxious or guilty about how much weight you may gain instead of feeling anxiety about your friendships or your connections with others. So eating and then focusing on weight and body image is a distraction from and a displacement of those feelings of anxiety, resentment, and guilt. So what's the answer? Say no to others and yes to yourself. That's called self-care. You know, of course, it's situational. You don't want to always do it, then you're selfish. You don't want to never do it, then you're selfless. But it can be tough to practice self-care, especially when on some level you think that what you need, want, or feel doesn't matter as much as the needs, wants, and feelings of others. Maybe you think you don't have the right to set boundaries that protect yourself. So challenge the idea that it's selfish to set limits. Limit setting is self-care. So let's go over those definitions again. Being selfish means having no consideration for other people and only being concerned with your own interests or well-being. Being selfless means being more concerned with the needs and wishes of others than with your own, which leaves you empty, deprived, angry, and lonely, among other things. In the middle between selfishness and selflessness is self-care, balancing your needs with those of others, giving yourself permission to have needs and wants that are just as important as those of other people. So if your default is to be selfless and to say yes to people when you really want to say no, maybe you want to ask yourself where you learn to make what other people want more important than what you want. Now, we grow up with different messages about self-sacrifice. For some people, it's considered noble, so it may feel as if somehow you're a better person if you're able to deny yourself and give up what you want in favor of making someone else happy. And don't get me wrong, that is a good thing to do, just not always. When there's no balance and you're always giving up you to take care of others, it's harmful to you. That kind of selflessness doesn't make you a better person. It makes you a deprived person, a hungry person, metaphorically, a person who's upset and empty and anxious. And if you don't get your needs met in life, you're likely to transfer those needs to food. So maybe you comfort yourself with something sweet or express your anger with crunchy food. Maybe you eat so much that it hurts, converting emotional pain to physical pain. What's the answer? The answer is to empower yourself to say no. When you say no to others at the appropriate time, you are saying yes to yourself. So if you're in a situation where you're afraid to speak up or say no, here are some guidelines for how to handle that situation. First of all, don't apologize. Don't make excuses. Don't justify. Don't explain yourself. Do offer other options if the situation calls for it. So let's start with the couple at the movies. So the wife could have said, yeah, you know, you're right. Horror movies aren't my favorite. Let's pick something we both want to see. Or my friend could tell his boss, I can't reschedule my weekend, but I'm willing to stay late once or twice during the week, which in other words is compromise. I can't reschedule my vacation, but I will make sure that I catch up on the work when I return. So here are some other situations that might come up. These are all things that have actually happened to people. For example, if someone is always asking you to babysit their kids and you don't want to do it, you actually want the weekend to yourself and not babysitting your friend's kids, you can say, no, I'm not going to be able to do that, but I can help you, you know, go on care.com and look at profiles. I can help you find another sitter. If someone asks to borrow money, you could say, I understand you're in a tough place right now, but I make it a rule not to lend money to friends. That way, it's not personal. You're not denying your friend in particular. This is your rule. These are your boundaries. And if they push it, if they tell you they're in a bind, oh, what are they going to do? Please, 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 just this once. Acknowledge they're in a tough place. Acknowledge they're in a bind. And then repeat that it just doesn't work for you. I know you're in a bind, but it's just not going to work for me. So, you know, I know you really need childcare or money or whatever, and then set the limit. But no, that's just not going to work for me. That doesn't work for me right now. Again, if you're afraid you're going to hurt their feelings or they'll be mad at you, that's a sign you're not valuing your time, your money, your wishes, your weekend. When you devalue yourself, it feels bad. And when you feel bad, again, you're more likely to turn to food for comfort and distraction. Many people are very good at meeting the needs of others while totally ignoring their own needs. In fact, maybe even denying their own needs. When you're taught on some level, either overtly or covertly, that self-sacrifice is noble, it's really hard to differentiate between being selfish and practicing self-care. But when you consistently practice self-care, when it becomes something that you do all the time, it becomes second nature, when you are meeting your needs on a regular basis and feeling good about it, not guilty, you won't use food for that purpose. You won't use food for comfort or distraction. So let me know your thoughts about guilt, setting limits, self-care, or anything else that's on your mind. My number here in the studio is 818-602-4929. 818-602-4929. I would love to hear from you. So what about this idea, back to guilt, what about this idea of feeling guilty for eating? Where does it come from? Well, I sometimes find that it is tied to guilt over the state of wanting. Really, it's guilt over desire. The idea of wanting something for yourself can sometimes feel selfish, as if wanting anything is too much. So sometimes we displace our desire for more of whatever we're lacking, whether that's money, recognition, sex, connection, better relationships, more friendships, whatever it may be, peace of mind, whatever we want more of, we displace our wish for more of that, which can feel unattainable, onto something we can actually have in that moment, like food. I don't want it, so you're not actively thinking, oh, I really want more money, but I can't have more money, so I'm going to have more cookies. That's not what you're literally thinking, but that's what's maybe hidden in your unconscious. That's your unconscious solution to deprivation. And then you feel guilty for giving in to those wants. So, you know, ask yourself, what are you really hungry for? What is it that you really want more of in your life? It's important to recognize how you're deprived and then to meet those needs or reconcile yourself to not having them met so you don't use food as a substitute for what you're yearning for, what you're hungry for. Also, I think I want to take this opportunity to explore the difference between guilt and shame. So guilt can be understood as being about something you did or did not do. Guilt references behavior and actions. So people feel guilty when they think they've done something wrong or when they choose not to take action. So guilt sounds like, oh, I've done something really bad and wrong. I did something really bad. Or I did something really bad or I didn't do something and that was bad of me. Oh, hold that thought. We have a caller. Hi, caller. Welcome to the Dr. Nina Show.
Yeah, hi, Dr. Nina. This is Larry from Burbank. How are you?
Hi, Larry from Burbank. Good to hear from you. Thanks again for coming in last week and being so amazing and open and candid and sharing your experience.
Yeah, I'd never been on a radio show, and it was fun. It really was fun. And even by being there, I learned a lot at being a guest on your show, so... You know, it's good. I have a question to run by you, and this is unusual because my mom is listening to your show downstairs, and I wanted to ask about how a relationship with food can be dysfunctional for someone else, and how food can actually be used as a weapon. Unconsciously, and I stressed 10 times before I went upstairs to make the call, that everything that will be described here is below the level of the surface. So can you describe that a little bit? I've tried to run that by her, and it hasn't gotten through.
Well, one example comes to mind. So there was a man in my support group several years ago, and he ended up losing about 150 pounds. And for most of his marriage, his weight was a source of contention between he and his wife. So his weight was always the problem. And it was really interesting. He lost 150 pounds, and now his weight was not the problem. And he started, instead of saying, oh my God, I'm the problem, I've got to do something about my weight, he started looking at the marriage through slightly different eyes and looking at how there were things about her that he wanted her to change or look at or examine. And do you know what she did? She baked him cookies. She started baking him cookies. Oh, you were so good. You've lost 150 pounds. That's so amazing. You can use a little reward, can't you? So on the outside, which she was calling it, oh, let's just reward him for this weight loss by baking cookies because he likes them. What was she really trying to do? Sabotage him and make him start gaining weight so that his weight would be the problem again.
Mm-hmm.
She used cookies for this purpose to avoid the issues in their relationship.
And maybe problems that she felt consciously or otherwise, it gave her a measure of extreme control, knowing that, again, unconsciously, she was picking at a very sensitive and deep wound that could have very horrible repercussions. So it was kind of toxic control.
Under the guise of reward or, you know, oh, you accomplished this, yay for you, let's just have a little treat, let me give this to you. Other times people will talk about things like they'll say to their spouses or their roommates or whoever they live with, look, I right now I can't eat this. And then inevitably the family members or the roommates or whoever they're living with will bring this into the house. So, cake is my downfall. I can't have cake. Don't bring me cake. Right now I'm working through it so that I can eat cake in a normal way. But right now I can't have it. I'm going to eat the whole cake. I can't do it. And the person will say, oh, yeah, I totally support you. Good for you for facing your what's eating at you. And then, oh, I brought cake. So it's a way of saying, it can mean different things for different people, but it's a way of creating a power struggle, keeping the person off balance, like the husband and wife that I initially just talked about. It could be a way of ignoring reality. you know.
Right, and food is the vehicle to do all of these things instead of looking at life choices and the past. You know, that's just the medium. I have said to my mom explicitly, "You're hurting me," straight up. And I know that the look of befuddlement and confusion is from a place beneath the level of consciousness. It's not that she deliberately, "I will not understand, I disagree," you know, or I'll say, "If you make this pie that you ostensibly brought home for us so we can enjoy, so I may nurture you, my show of love, what if that's cocaine?" And what I've heard is that, "Well, you bring that stuff home too." And I said, "Well, if I bring home cocaine, does that justify giving me more cocaine?"
So
I have a major problem with food, and this hasn't helped. But I have to say over and over again, it's not anything conscious that she does. It's below the level of the surface. Right. It's not a bad person or anything.
So if you're, of course, it's not about being a bad person. It's about communicating in a way that is actually damaging. So if your mom perhaps sees bringing in cake or pie as a show of love, like that's how she shows her love, is that a possibility, by the way?
Oh, of course.
Okay.
This is love.
So if you say, "Hey, that's not love, that's a dangerous drug," it could feel like her love is being rejected, and that's why she can't understand you. Because if for her, "Wait, no, this is not cocaine, this is love. This is love here. I'm showing my love." And you say, "No, you're hurting me." It's just two completely different meanings. And often people cannot understand why their love is being rejected. They can't hear it. I think she's having a hard time empathizing with you because perhaps she feels as if her love/cake pie is being rejected.
Well, you know, as you talk, it brings up, you talk about love and food. I think you know what my kryptonite is, right? That's the L word. So it gets really messy when considering my own, I'll call it a defect, even though that's kind of hard. It's a double whammy. So I'm
conflict.
Maybe at some level.
Conflict. I prefer the term conflict. It's less pejorative.
Yeah. It is. And that cuts to the depth of till about 1960. Which, that brings me to another thing, if I can shift gears, because this is real important, if I may.
Of course.
Okay. Through the years with, you know, getting therapy and all of that, I have what I think is a tremendous amount of insight. I know from where I come, and I've evolved to the point where it's not about blame, it's about, and I've said this many times to many people, it's about cause and effect, and all the brain stuff, all the knowledge, all the insight, all the reasons mean nothing in the absence of processing this stuff. I have not processed it. I'm stuck in my head. Can you explain to your listeners and to my mom the importance of processing versus insight?
Yes, insight. And I love Oprah, but she has not done us a good service by her Oprah aha moment, which sort of intimates that you have this aha insight, and then everything changes, like all the dominoes fall in your life. That does not happen. Insight is just an intellectual understanding of what happened to go through, but it doesn't dislodge it doesn't change anything, because you've got the only way to change the way you feel is to not only feel the disavowed feelings from the past, but have a different experience in the present. And I also want to add something. Insight about the past ought not to be just about the past, because then it doesn't do you any good. It really has to be about, well, what's happened? How is that past in the present?
Right.
How is it being repeated? How's it being repeated? So you have to process the wounds of the past. You have by mm-hmm. feeling them, not just you can't think away your pain. You've got to have an effective experience to heal.
Right? Mm-hmm. It's sort of like, you know, if I read an advanced manual in flying an F-16, I won't be able to fly the F-16. I have to process that information through experience, and sometimes it may be very painful. But you know, book learning isn't the solution to this. And I have a lot of book learning, which probably helps a little bit, but without the painful, and I call it painful processing in this case, is redundant. It is painful. And part of me doesn't want that. I'm hanging on to the comfort of reality, but I got to process this, and it's been devastatingly frustrating. But here we are.
Yes, and because it feels too vulnerable, and you feel too overtaken by horrible feelings. And what I think it's good to remember is that you survived what happened to you. You know, you will survive processing what happened to you.
Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly. And any of that cause and effect, again, going back, just like the food, only going back, was not a conscious thing at all. But it's there. It's kind of locked in, and I need to lance that wound. And you know, there may be a lot of pus that may hurt like hell, but studying the wound in a book ain't going to do it.
That's right. And yeah. Going back to your mother saying, you know, look, you're giving me sweet food. I don't need sweet food from you because it registers as cocaine. I need sweetness. I need, you know, other forms of your love. I need you to listen to me or talk to me or try to understand me or go out of your comfort zone to help me process this. You know?
Yeah. Well, yeah. And another form of kryptonite for me is I don't do that well at all, just like my dad. Exactly like my dad, only probably even to a greater extent in terms of opening up and all that. And you know, maybe when I find myself drinking my third Pepsi and inhaling my fourth cheeseburger, that's my way of avoiding that deficiency or that conflict.
Yeah, I posted something on Instagram today, and it was, if I ask you to name everyone you love, how long would it take for you to name yourself? And someone, a guy wrote and said, what did he say? Let me find it. He said, whoops, hold on. He said, look, this is powerful. Learning to love myself was a non-thought because of the way I grew up. My father had a hard exterior, and emotion was almost like a gift from him. Very rare. When I started my weight loss journey, my eyes opened up to a lot, and I started to realize what I was missing out on, happiness. And now I have some happiness, and I have learned to love myself. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're, what's modeled from you, for you is men don't feel, then it doesn't matter what your intellectual understanding is. There's a part of you that's like, yeah, men don't feel. I'm a man. I'm not going to feel.
You know, I hate to say it now, but I will. It reminds me what I said last week on your show, and that is, as a little boy, sometimes when I cried, this only happened, I think, once, maybe twice, but I was told, stop pissing with your eyes.
Yeah.
That's sort of shame on top of shame. And again, I can't say this enough. I'm sorry to your listeners, but it wasn't conscious. It wasn't deliberate. It was stuff below his iceberg, and why I can't get rid of that is because I'm not processing it, not because I don't understand.
And so, one other part, which is because it is possible that what ties you to your father, who's no longer with us, what ties you to your father and gives you a sense of having a father is being like him or treating yourself as he treated you. So
right, and yeah, go ahead, sorry.
So also processing and sort of mourning what happened with you and your father and what didn't happen is a way to come to terms with that absence and that presence, of both what he wasn't and what he was, so that mm-hmm. you can be free of that and stop hanging on to him by repeating this mode of being.
Yeah. Boy, there's a lot there. I know that. I know that my brother, being more of an outgoing, outward-directed person, more like him in that sense, I think got a lot of that just through natural living. I was too busy staring at dandelions, and my mom thought I was deaf. Being so inner-directed, you know, it made it hard for him. And that was, like I say, almost 60 years ago. Knowing that, you know, I had to process that, not just know it.
Right. Yes, you have to have the emotional experience that you prevented yourself from having then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I just got to keep trying. You know, just keep doing it and keep doing it.
And you are doing it. So I hope that you and your mom got some benefit from what I said. I'm happy to talk about it more next week or any time, but that would be those would be things that you could talk about, you know, together if she's able to.
Yeah, very much so. Okay, good. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. As always, thanks for calling in.
Well, I'll talk to you in a week.
I'll talk to you then. I look forward to it.
Thank you.
Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
You know, it's interesting. He was talking about shame, and his timing of calling was interesting because I was just about to get to shame, the difference between guilt, which is I've done something really bad and wrong, and shame is that guilt is about what you've done or haven't done. Shame is about who you are as a person and your essential caller, essential character. I say as we have a caller. Hi, caller, you're on with Dr. Nina.
Hi, this is Nick.
Hey, Nick. Thanks again for being here last week. It was so much fun.
I loved it. It was really great. I got a story, a short story to tell you that happened to me that I forgot about, but it was really a dramatic story for me. I was in business. I worked for a company. Large company, and we had like a real regional meeting where I lived, and I was in charge of the region, and we had a dinner meeting, and the senior vice president came in from out of town, and he said to me, he loved food, everything was food for him, and so on, and he said to me, well, here, you make reservations at this restaurant, you know, I love this restaurant, this, that. I said, don't worry, sir, it'll be taken care of, we'll have the whole thing. And we go to the restaurant, and we go and order, it's meat, it's a heavy steak restaurant, and we all order our dinners and so on, and it comes to him, and he orders a certain cut, you know, that it has, thick, whatever, has all the trimmings. And the waitress says to him, we're all out of that cut today. Well, he looks at me, and he gives me a dirty look, and he blames it on me that the cut he wanted wasn't there, because it was my fault, and really made me feel bad. So, I mean, obviously it ruined the dinner for me, and I'm a sensitive person as it is anyways, and here we are, food is an issue to me anyways, I love every meal I eat anyways, and this guy, I'm trying to make food as an issue for this guy, and it destroys the whole meeting for me because he didn't get the steak that he wanted. And it's like I forgot about it, but we were talking about saying yes, no, this, that, so on and every day, but I never forgot about this guy that professionally he took his meal more important than anything else that had to be done.
and somehow made you feel bad for not having the psychic ability to know that they would not have that particular. That you were supposed to know what he was going to order and know and make sure that it was there. So your crime was failing to be psychic.
Exactly. And but then again, and especially because it was food, you know, it was just it was a strange feeling that's you know, because he liked food, I like food, everybody, you know, we're all whatever. And then when it didn't happen, it was my fault. It was my fault he didn't get the food he wanted. And I don't know how it relates to what you were saying before, but that's what came across my mind.
Guilt.
You know, the
guilty.
Yeah.
Yeah. That you felt somehow, you felt guilty for something that was not yours to feel guilty about.
Right.
And it
I had
was,
no control over it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was just one of those things. And also, it's funny what you thought of before, and I felt it kind of light and stuff like that. Like every day, I mean, when I'm home and Chris is cooking, she says, do you want this? Do you want that? Do you want this? You want that? And if I don't have an answer for her, she wants an answer. You know how you said, give somebody, say, yeah, I want to see that movie, or I don't care if I see that movie. You know, you really need to say what you want to see.
Yes, you know, you have to speak up.
It's so true.
And I mean, set limits true. Or say yeah. Say speak up for what you want and don't want.
Exactly. Well, that was my little story for today, and let you go on. But that really hit me at home when you're talking about that, when that happened with this guy, and he was just so nuts. Go on. Have a nice day.
No, I'm thank you, Nick. No, I'm just thinking about your story that I wonder if it had been about anything but food, if you would have had that feeling.
Yeah. No, probably
like
not.
He was looking at you like you somehow let him down or deprived him.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, and it was an important meeting and everything else, but that's what he took out of it, and that's what he blamed me for, and I had nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
And what can I tell you? It's just, I think about it. Well,
let yourself off the hook. You did nothing wrong.
Okay.
Give yourself some reassurance. Thank you. Thank you for calling and sharing and expanding on the topic.
Yes.
As
Thank
always.
Thank you very much.
And hopefully I'll talk with you next week as well.
Oh, I hope so.
Okay. Bye for now. So, as you know, now I have some ways of going. Let me think. Let me look at the time. Okay, just quickly, how do you get rid of guilt? Here's how you get rid of guilt. First, think of something that makes you feel guilty. What is your supposed crime? For example, oh, I feel so guilty for eating that pizza. Or, oh, I feel guilty for even wanting ice cream. I have no business wanting ice cream. I feel guilty. So then identify what that means about you. For example, oh, I ate that pizza. I have no willpower. Oh, I want that ice cream. I have no self-control. Why am I even thinking about ice cream? I know I'm supposed to lose weight. Some kind of meaning it has about you, and it's generally a negative meaning. So if this guilt was not attached to what you're eating or what you weigh, what might you feel guilty about? If I could take my magic wand, which I have in my office, and I have been told that it works only very slowly, if it worked right away, and I could wave it over you and take away all your thoughts, all your guilt about anything to do with your body, what might you feel guilty about? That's the hard question, right? Oh, if I'm not guilty about eating pizza, maybe I feel guilty for being dissatisfied in this area of my life, or I feel guilty because I don't feel towards my kids the way I wish I felt, or, you know, I resent my friends, or whatever it is. Also ask yourself, what are your rules about wanting? For example, do you have rules that say something along the lines of don't want too much, don't be selfish, be happy with what you have, other people have it so much worse, don't complain, don't be a whiner, who do you think you are wanting more, don't be full of yourself, Don't be angry. Do any of those sound familiar? If so, then you've got to question some of these ideas you have about wanting. The next question to ask yourself is, what do you imagine is wrong with you because you have these wishes or wants? For example, these are the things people have said. Well, I'm needy, I'm too much, or I'm not enough. There's something wrong with me. I'm not lovable, I'm deficient. Then ask yourself where you learned to relate to yourself. You know, what childhood experiences, what experiences in your school, in your relationships with friends, romantic situations, what relationships from the past taught you to think this way about yourself? And last, what is another way of looking at this situation? What is another way of looking at your behavior with food? So, for example, you might say, well, I'm still learning to identify and process my feelings. And I have conflicts about wanting more out of life. That makes me feel needy. And that makes me feel guilty. But I have to remember that wanting more for myself is not bad. It is not shameful. It is not wrong. It is human. And I'm going to be curious about where in my life I feel deprived so I don't use food to get quote-unquote more or to express my conflict over wanting more by eating. So when you identify and process that core guilt and shame, you're less likely, in fact, not likely, to attach guilt and shame to food, weight, or body image. That's how you get rid of guilt and shame. That's how you make peace with food. So, as you know, I like to bring you the thoughts and ideas of other people on the subjects that I talk about. So here is a short article by a dietitian, a no-diet dietitian named Kylie Mitchell, and she has a lot to say about food guilt. She says, food guilt is the norm in our society, but why should it be? Many people feel and express guilt when they eat certain foods. Get on social media, and within 5 minutes, 5 seconds actually, you'll see someone associate guilt with the food they just chose to post and eat. Or you overhear someone at the gym say, oh, I just ran 5 miles, now I can go eat ice cream and not feel guilty. It is a very destructive cycle. I feel guilty when I eat X. But why does that happen, and how do you stop feeling guilty about food? Now, she goes on to talk about the things that you've heard me talk about, so this will be familiar to you, but it's something you can't hear enough of. So she says, let's talk first about what's going on when you carry guilt about food in your mind. When you restrict yourself from foods you deem bad, the little part of you that houses your guilt gets to stay cool, calm, and collected. Everything in your world seems right, except the fact that you are hungry and not satisfied by the carbless kale salads you are eating. So you have low guilt, which feels nice and gives you a sense of control over your life. But eventually, remember, deprivation leads to binging. Eventually, you get to a point where you can't deprive yourself anymore, and you let go of deprivation, and then you let yourself eat what your body is craving. And this leads to extreme eating. Extreme deprivation leads to extreme eating. The more you restrain yourself from certain foods, the more off limits those foods become, and the more you will overeat when you finally allow yourself to have those foods. And this is also usually the point that you vow never to eat X again, and the seesaw between guilt and deprivation starts all over again. It is a vicious cycle. And all the while, you're asking yourself why you have no willpower around food. But willpower is not the issue here. She reminds us that the real issue is actually deprivation. And many people can seesaw between guilt and deprivation for years, years. However, by giving yourself permission to eat all the foods you want, you give yourself permission to walk away from deprivation and, as a result, walk away from guilt. So how do you stop the guilt? Walk away from deprivation. Stop making restrictive rules for yourself around food. Stop the diet mentality. And in order to stop restriction, you first have to stop labeling food as good or bad. You've got it, because inevitably that becomes good you, bad you. You've got to give yourself permission to eat foods that satisfy you and allow all food to become legalized in your mind. And as you walk away from deprivation, you'll also find yourself walking away from the obsession with that food. So wouldn't it be nice to have your thoughts back in other areas of your life that may be more productive and beneficial? Start utilizing your brain space to think about living your life to the fullest, and recognize that the food you eat and your body's unique shape is only a tiny component of living a fulfilling life. Amen. Kylie, yes, very well said. And that's a good place for us to end the show today. Thank you so much for joining me as we talk about guilt, getting rid of the guilt. I am here every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific here on LA Talk Radio, helping you create a healthier, happier relationship to food and yourself. Listen live every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific, or listen online on iTunes. And if you like the show, please be sure to leave a rating or a review. It helps us reach and help more people. Thanks, and see you next week.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.